Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norland is here with me, and I suppose we'll start with the Champions Classic. It was a doubleheader in different places last night. We'll begin with the first game. Final score, Michigan State 75, Duke 69. Norlander, I know you were driving home from Mohegan Sun during this game, didn't really see it. So let me just ask you something in general. Were you surprised that the Spartans went inside an empty Cameron Indoor, led the entire second half at one point by as many as 16 points, and improved to 3-0 on the season?
I'm not surprised they won. I'm surprised they were up by that many. I mean, I called you on the way home, and I think I didn't know the score, so I just blindly guessed, and my guess was Duke up 5. And then you said Michigan State's up, I think they were up 16, and then they cut to 13 at some point in our conversation there. So that did surprise me, but I don't think it's all that shocking that Michigan State won. Yeah, so I didn't see any of the game. I caught a couple of the highlights, and I saw what Duke was maybe incapable of being able to do. But as someone who wrote about the game and who watched the game, what was the biggest takeaway for you in that? Because to me, what's interesting about both those teams, Rocket Watts apparently had a really nice game, and he's going to need to have a lot of those games this season to keep Michigan State in that top 10 conversation, which it's in right now. It's eighth in the polls, and it's the fourth highest rated Big Ten team in the polls, but it's still top 10. And then Duke, which is replacing Trey Jones, it's got to figure out a few things, I think, at point guard, which is fine. We're still early in the season. But as someone who saw it, what were your biggest impressions of the game?
Well, what's interesting about these two teams, two blue blood programs, Hall of Fame coaches, all that, they both lost incredibly important pieces. At Michigan State, it's Cassius Winston, Xavier Tillman. At Duke, it's the top three scorers from last season's team, most notably Vernon Carey and Trey Jones. So Duke enrolled a good recruiting class, very good recruiting class. But as I believe I mentioned on an earlier podcast, this is the first time since 2012 that Duke hasn't enrolled a consensus top 10 freshman to replace what exited. You know, the 2018 class, for instance, had three top 10 prospects, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Zion Williamson. They've already got two consensus top 10 prospects in the class of 2021 set to enroll in advance of next season, Paolo Banchero and AJ Griffin. This class didn't have one. And though Jalen Johnson looked incredible in the season opener, it was against Coppin State. So 19 points, 19 rebounds, but it was against Coppin State. You play Michigan State, that's a level up in competition, and he only had 11 points, 4 rebounds in the game against Michigan State. Wendell Moore was 0 of 9 from the field. DJ Stewart, 0 of 6 from the field. Duke had 9 assists and 12 turnovers. So whereas when we talked about, I think, both of these teams in the preseason, it was going to be important for players who were already in the program to have breakthrough seasons. And Matthew Hurt was good last night, but Wendell Moore was not. And meantime, Aaron Henry and Rocket Watts, which were two guys that needed to have bigger roles and be impactful, they averaged 19.6 rebounds, 4.6 assists per game last season. Last night, they combined for 34 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists against Duke. The bottom line, Michigan State's returning players that needed to break through were really good against Duke. Duke's two primary returning players, one of them was literally 0 of 9 from the field, didn't make a bucket. I don't want to say that was the difference in the game, but Michigan State did control it the entire second half. And though Duke was fouling and making the margin closer at the end, Michigan State was never seriously threatened. And you just don't see Duke get handled like that inside Cameron Indoor very often, regardless of the opponent. Now, a different Cameron Indoor, you know, the Cameron crazies are not there, but still, it was on Duke's campus, and Duke really wasn't that competitive in the second half at all.
Yeah. It seems like the setup in there, by the way, pretty good for just, you know, the general appearance and presence and all that stuff. I was expecting they would go, it just seemed that they would do the cardboard cutout to like the max in there, because why not? It just seems like if there's going to be one arena in college basketball that really tries to replicate that, that vision we've seen in other sports, it would have been Cameron Indoor, but instead they had that, I don't know, that tapestry and like photos and of previous Cameron crazy. So whatever, it was pretty solid there. This, by the way, with Duke, you know, I was vocal on the podcast about just skepticism over its top 10 standing. I still am there. I'm not in on this being a Final Four contender, and I would say if you're a top 10 team, that, you know, if we want to draw a line, that's where I would. Not that they can't get there, I just would not consider them to be in that upper echelon. And a home loss to Michigan State, I think, kind of goes toward that. Duke's next game is scheduled to be Friday against Bellarmine, which is a school that's new to D1 this season. And then I'm pretty sure it lost its game against Elon on Sunday, because Elon went on a pause. Yesterday was kind of a wacky and wild day for me, but I think I saw that come across my wire that Elon is on a pause. So they're scheduled to play this weekend. I don't think that game's going to be able to be played. But we're a week out from another good challenge, basically, provided that, again, both teams can play. They're going to play Illinois on Tuesday. And so if Duke can beat Bellarmine, get to 2-1, and then they play Illinois and they lose, then we'll have a real conversation about what they are and what they aren't in the here and now. But to me, it was more about Michigan State winning the way that it was able to win. Tom Izzo's team, you know, going in there, getting a good game out of Rocket Watts, good game out of Aaron Henry. My last thing on this, because I didn't see, I just gotta give it. I saw Andy Katz plenty in the bubble, and I think he's actually going back. He's got to do the whole process again. He's got to test in the outside world, produce a negative test, get there, test again, quarantine. But he's going back in. God bless him. But Andy Katz had just an unreal stunt last night. It was not intentional, but this dude posts a Twitter video at like 11:40 at night, and it's him interviewing Joey Hauser as the team's boarding the damn flight home. Like, normally, like in normal times, he'll get an interview for, you know, the NCAA March Madness Twitter account or whatever for social, and it's, you know, it's in a controlled environment with a good backdrop, or you know, just, you know, maybe in a team hotel room if they're staying over, which isn't the case here, obviously. But it's literally like Joey Hauser on the plane as his teammates are walking by. I don't know why I found it so funny. It hit me the right way. But Andy, shouts to your hustle. That was just amazing. It's like, just, you and I have had to try and get interviews after games with coaches and players in the past, and it's usually obviously on the phone and not for video. But just the idea of like, we got to get something for social, and they're like, you know what? We can give you Joey, but it's going to have to be on the team plane. Whatever. Shouts to you, Andy Katz.
Joey Hauser now leading Michigan State in scoring. Sam Hauser leading Virginia in scoring. They both got wins on Tuesday night. And last thing I'll say on Michigan State, you know, this is sort of what I wrote about, or at least partly what I wrote about. You know, Tom Izzo is a Naismith Memorial Hall of Famer. He's won a national championship. He's been to 8 Final Fours. Like, his coaching legacy is secure forever. He has nothing left to prove. But when you talk to him, he doesn't think of himself that way at all. He actually thinks he does need another national title to validate his career, because I think only 15 or 16 coaches in history have multiple national titles. A whole bunch of people have one. When you get to 2, you cut the list significantly. If you get to 3, the next person to get to 3, and I guess Jay Wright would be the most likely candidate, you become just the 7th person to get at least 3. So Tom really wants that second national title, and he's expressed that to me. I've never heard him fret too much about his career record against Mike Krzyzewski, but you know it's got to eat him up a little bit, if only because he gets asked about it all the time, like, especially in this Champions Classic where they meet every, I guess it's 3 years on rotation. So he entered last night's game with a 2-12 career record against Mike Krzyzewski. And so after getting his 3rd win, and he didn't say, I'm now 3-12, woohoo, but he made it very clear, like, okay, no fans, whatever. We beat a good program. We beat a good team. I'm not going to put an asterisk beside it. And so it was just a little somewhat funny moment where he was like, I'm going to take any win against Kay I can get regardless of the circumstances, because it is a thing, like a bullet point that gets brought up every time Michigan State plays Duke, Tom Izzo's lack of success against Coach K, as if that's a negative, like who has success against Coach K. Even K referenced this at a Champions Classic, probably the last time they played, when he would have improved to 12-2 all time against Tom Izzo. Somebody was like, you know, your record now is 12-2 against Tom Izzo. And he was like, you know, he didn't say this, but I remember feeling like he was thinking it, like, okay, can you name somebody with a great record against me? Because I'm probably like 12-2 about, you know, if I've coached 14 times against anybody, I'm probably close to 12-2 against 90% of them. So that speaks to the level of Duke's program and Kay's career more than it says anything about Izzo. But Tom getting a third win against Coach K is something he wasn't going to apologize for, given a lack of fans inside Cameron Indoor.
All right, next game. Kansas, Kentucky. This one was brutal. I mean, to be honest, like, it's Kansas and Kentucky, so we're going to talk about it, but there's not much to talk about. I mean, Terrence Clark and Brandon Boston have yet to hit a three. Kansas wins 65-62. A great game out of Jalen Wilson. He's probably the biggest talking point out of this game. But for Kentucky, you know, no fretting, without a doubt. Although I guess it is the first time Kentucky has started 1-2 under Cal, so that's mildly notable, mildly interesting, I guess. Isaiah Jackson had an interesting game. He had 7 points, 12 boards, and 8 blocks. Like, he shows some good flashes there. But Kentucky, you know, when Olivier Saar wasn't on the floor, it was an issue. They have been weirdly inefficient around the rim the past two games against Richmond and Kansas in terms of layups and dunks. Like, they've missed a lot of those shots, a lot of bunnies there. And, yeah, for Kansas, it was just all Jalen Wilson. Like, he had 21 second-half points. They win in a super ugly game. Cal even said afterward, he said, if I'm Bill Self, I'm absolutely thrilled because my team shot 24% from three and like 29% from the field, and we were able to get out of there with the win. So Wilson was a great deal there. Also, like, Marcus Garrett looks physically ill, and he was originally reported not to be playing from Bill Self, who taped like a radio interview, I don't know, X amount of hours before tip, and then Marcus Garrett approached Bill Self either on or when they were just getting on the team bus and convinced him otherwise, and he started, and he played 35 minutes. But even Holly Rowe was, like, talking about how he was sick. So that was just a weird thing. I don't know. Hopefully he is going to be okay, and hopefully it's obviously not COVID. Only bring up that part because Kansas has played two teams that have currently active COVID cases, with St. Joe's and Gonzaga. But he played on the floor regardless, and Kansas gets a win. It's 2-1 while Kentucky's 1-2.
Yeah, now Marcus Garrett might not have COVID.
It might be food poisoning. I don't know, but it was a weird dynamic, GP.
He certainly has COVID symptoms. Even Bill Self acknowledged that. But he's consistently tested negative as recently as Tuesday before the game with a PCR test. So that's where we are right now. Like, what do you do? People have made the point, and I think accurately, that if Marcus Garrett were in an office in any sort of work environment, even if he had tested negative for COVID, they would have sent him home. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you work in an office and Marcus Garrett worked with you and he had multiple COVID symptoms, even if he tested negative as recently as in the afternoon, they would have sent him home. So it is somewhat controversial that he was in the game. And we'll just say here, same thing we said about Gonzaga. Let's cross our fingers and hope that it doesn't lead to an outbreak at Kansas or Kentucky, but that was certainly a storyline that was getting attention during the game. The biggest story, and let me touch on Jalen Wilson real quick. I don't think we've ever said his name on this podcast.
We might have said it when he, because he was going to go to Michigan and he bailed. I think we gave him a couple quick minutes in a previous pod, but otherwise.
So, yeah, he gets 23 points, 10 rebounds. He has scored in double figures in all three games, right now averaging 16.7 rebounds per contest. He's second on Kansas's team in scoring, first in rebounding. If you've never heard of him, the reason is probably because he's barely played. He appeared in, I think, two games last season as a freshman and broke his foot in the second game, or broke his ankle rather in the second game. And so they redshirted him, and, you know, he's a top 55 prospect class of 2019. So he redshirted last year. He's now a redshirt freshman and looks like a real difference maker for Kansas so far. Again, second on the team in scoring, first in rebounding. The biggest story of the game for me, it was something you've already touched on, which is that for both teams shot it horrifically. They were a combined 8 of 42 from three-point range, which means they missed 34 of the 42 three-pointers they attempted. Kansas was 5 of 21 from 3. Kentucky was 3 of 21 from 3. Kentucky starters were 0 of 11 from 3. And, yes, B.J. Boston and Terrence Clarker 0 for their careers so far. Both shooting 0% combined, I think 0 of 19 through three games. And Kentucky as a team is shooting 19.1% from 3 on the season. And this, I don't want to say drives me crazy because, like, I don't, you know, whatever. But it just, I don't understand how Kentucky can annually enroll the best recruiting class or the second best recruiting class in the country and annually have rosters with no shooters. It's just like okay, they're shooting 19% from 3 right now. Last season, they shot 34.3% from 3, ranked 115th in the country. Season before that, 35.4% from 3, 114th in the country. Season before that, 2017-18, 35.7% from 3, that ranked 124th in the country. Season before that, 2016-17, 35.3% from 3, that ranked 155th in the country. In other words, each of the past four seasons, they've shot below 35.5% from 3, never finished in the top 110 in the country in three-point field goal percentage. How can you pick your players every year? And like John, he doesn't shy away from this. He says, I remember when the G League program became a thing and they were asking John Calipari about, well, what happens if these guys that you normally get go to the G League? He's like, we'll just get the next best guys. Like in some form, he said the phrase, we eat first. Kentucky eats first when it comes to recruiting. We go to the table, we get what we want, and then everybody else can fight over what's left. So if that is true, and the recruiting rankings for more than a decade now suggest that it is, how do you end up with no shooters every year? Like NBA teams actually construct their teams in ways that that surround stars with shooters. Like you're the Lakers, you're building a world championship team. We've got LeBron James, we've got Anthony Davis. Okay, let's get Danny Green. Why? Because he can knock down jumpers, create space. The Bucks will try to surround Giannis with shooters. The Pelicans are now going to try to surround Zion with shooters. Like, why didn't Duke surround Zion with shooters? And why doesn't Kentucky ever surround its lottery picks with shooters? I don't understand it.
Well, I mean, it's not that like they haven't had them, but some of the shooting has been those players have blossomed more once they've gotten to the NBA. Tyler Hero was a fabulous freshman. And Devin Booker was a good freshman. But they were not the shooters then that they are now. There's no doubt about it. I actually think that it's an interesting question.
I guess I would say this, because Tyler Hero was a highly regarded prospect who was also a shooter. Devin Booker, highly regarded prospect, also a shooter. What I mean is
you want a sniper. Yeah.
Yeah, I want B.J. Boston and Terrence Clark, and then I want somebody who doesn't necessarily project as an NBA player, but my God, he's going to make shots 44% of them and create space for B.J. Boston and Terrence Clark. Yeah. That's what I want on that team. Just somebody who you look at him and you go, okay, I don't know if that guy's a future lottery pick. I don't know if he'll ever play in the NBA, but he is perfect for this college basketball team. NBA teams actually pursue players like that. I'm not sure why at the top of the college game that hasn't been a priority yet.
My one theory I have on it is if you want to get that kind of player, you might need to look in the 50 to 150 range. Not that really great shooters can't be five-star prospects in the top 25 range. They can, but usually athleticism, physicality, scoring domination more than shooting accuracy puts you into that top 20 category. Again, there can be players that are great shooters that wind up there, but I think the kind of player you're describing is definitely in the four-star and then down into the three-star range. And when you're Kentucky and you're annually involved in the recruitment of 10 to 12 players, all of whom are five stars or borderline five stars, that's how you wind up in that situation. That's a first, you know, that's a hypothesis for me.
I wonder, with the transfer market opening up, where that nobody needs a waiver anymore starting next season, like you transfer one Division I school to the other, you can play immediately. I wonder if that's how Kentucky and Duke address that issue. Like, okay, we're going to enroll our one and dones and our lottery picks. Now let's go find the best mid-major shooter in America and just say, hey, come play with our lottery picks and just knock down shots for us. I don't know if that's what Kentucky and Duke would do. And let me be clear, I recognize I'm sitting here questioning Hall of Fame coaches' approach to roster building. Like, I understand how silly that might seem on some level, but if you'll allow me to do it, I would continue to enroll my one and done lottery picks at Kentucky and Duke, and then I would supplement my roster with, I would actually go look for the best shooters already established in college basketball, whether they're at the mid-major level or they're in the Big Ten or the Pac-12. I would go identify the best shooters in the country who are already established in college, who I think are talented enough to be on the court for me. And I'd say, hey, come play with our lottery picks inside Rupp Arena. Come play with our lottery picks inside Cameron Indoor. I would look for shooters who are already established at the college level and take advantage of the waiver requirement no longer being a thing.
Well, Terrence Clark, the five-star freshmen in that game were, you know, Isaiah Jackson looked solid. Jalen Wilson, a former, not five-star, but a former, was he a five-star? I can't remember. But anyway.
Jalen Wilson was like 53rd in the class of 2019. He's a four-star guy.
The point is, those freshmen look good, but I also saw a freshman. You want to talk about him?
You saw Evan Mobley inside Bubbleville on Tuesday. USC beat BYU 79-53. We'll talk about that next. But first, check this out.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
So you did see Evan Mobley inside Bubbleville on Tuesday, Norlander. For people who don't know, he is the likely one-and-done freshman at USC. Trojans beat BYU 79-53. They're now 3-0. Mobley had 17 points, 11 rebounds, 2 blocks. He's now averaging 16.3 points, 9.0 rebounds, and 2.0 blocks per game, shooting 67.7% from the field, 66.7 from three on limited attempts, 45.5% for the free throw line. I don't know what's going on there, but you tweeted, and this is why I wanted to bring this up, okay, during the game, like, you've seen enough. There's no reason Evan Mobley doesn't need to be in the top three of mock drafts. I do have him second, and I think I might be the only person, at least the only mock draft I've seen, that has Evan Mobley second behind Cade Cunningham heading into this season. Seven-footer who is skilled, I'm with you. Like, I don't, unless you want to say, hey, listen, I just know his five best friends and they all tell me he hates basketball. Mm. Like, unless that's really a thing, I don't know what people don't love about Evan Mobley.
So you were saying that you've got him behind Cade and you're the only one. Are you saying that the other ones have him number one or the other ones have him outside the top two?
I've seen him as low as like 5, 6, 7. Mm. I think I'm the only one. I'm the only one I've seen, I'll put it that way, that has him in the top two right now.
He is certainly super enticing on the offensive end. 7 feet tall. His build, I tweeted this as well. He's like 90% of the frame of Jaren Jackson Jr. when Jaren Jackson Jr. came out of Michigan State. He's a little more slight, needs a little more, but, you know, very athletic. Defensively, there's still some work to do. That was the one thing where he looked a little bit drifty at times during the game. Yeah, I wouldn't say outright loss, but, you know, it was also watching from, you know, right there on the baseline versus watching on TV. Sometimes you can get a better perspective on TV. But, like, he just, I don't know. He was aggressive, and yet he let the game come to him. I did talk to Mark Pope, the BYU coach. I talked to two perspectives here. One, before and after the game, I talked to Andy Enfield, and he said, you know, Evan is not, his brother's Isaiah, who had a good game. By the way, USC just killed BYU. I didn't see it coming. They romped him 79-53. And I'll get to, just real quick, I'll get to Pope in a second, what he said about his team. But Andy said that Isaiah Mobley, who's now a sophomore, he's got a good edge to him. He's got some vocal leadership qualities. Evan, you know, he's not that. He's definitely much quieter, super respectful, and really good kid, and just kind of learning his way. Like, you know, USC is a weird team, by the way. Like, they could/should be a tournament team. What they did on Tuesday was certainly a statement, but this is like total hodgepodge of transfers, grad transfers, guys getting minutes that were on the roster last season that didn't get minutes there. So that's, you know, Enfield even said this is like a, you know, we'll see what we can do. I got to figure out the pieces here, but did they come together and click. Mobley is really, I mean, he's just super enticing. He has a really good knack for there's an ability with some elite players where once the rhythm of a design play breaks down, be it because a ball gets deflected, or there's an offensive rebound opportunity, or the defense throws something at you, there are certain players that can make something happen by pure instinct. And I saw that 3 or 4 times from Mobley on Tuesday. That just kind of reinforced to me that, yeah, absolutely, he's that kind of guy. And he's going to be able to step out. He's only taken 3 trays so far this season. He's hit 2 of them. I do think that he will be the guy that will occasionally step out, and that's just going to further cement that he should be a top 3 pick once we get to June there. Pope told me that he was fascinated with Mobley because he saw it in the game, and then he saw it on tape. He said he does not play selfish. He doesn't force anything. He is this super rare talent, and Pope's pretty qualified to speak on this, given his history as a player and as a coach. He said he's a super rare talent in that you normally don't get guys that are big men, like 6'10", 6'9", and up, that when they're a 5-star, top 10 kind of guy, they don't press. They don't push the issue. They don't really try and make sure they get theirs, because when you're a big, you're obviously relying on your playmakers, and so sometimes when you get the ball, you'll kind of grip it and try and make something happen. He said that's not him. That's not Evan. From what I've seen, his exact quote to me, I think, was he could score 6 points in a game, be totally fine with it, and be by far the most important player in the game. And that's the kind of thing. Well, one, I think that can be true, and two, that's why I think that he is going to project. Like, it's going to be a pretty good 21 draft class, and there's no guarantee that he'll go top 3. He could go 5. He could go 6. But I think that if he continues to do what he did against BYU, it's going to be very hard to make the case that he shouldn't be 1, 2, or 3 in next summer when the draft is held.
The other guy that is in that conversation for number 2, perhaps even number 1, is Jalen Green, who, of course, is a part of that G League program. But I just remember you and I were in Vegas a few summers ago, and we were watching Evan Mobley's grassroots team. He played on the Adidas circuit, so we didn't see him that often. But we were watching him in Vegas, and I don't know if we were both sitting with Mark Fox or I was just sitting with Mark Fox, but Mark Fox was there. Obviously, former Nevada coach, former Georgia coach, now the head coach at Cal. And I can't remember the timeline. I feel like Mark was out.
He was out.
He was out.
Okay.
He was out. This is before he got the Cal job. But because he was out, and sometimes this is what coaches do in between jobs, is they will work grassroots camps and they'll work in Adidas camp or Nike camp or Under Armour camp or whatever. And Mark had told me that he had worked with Evan Mobley at a camp. And first thing he said was, incredible kid, absolutely incredible kid. And Kevin Durant, future number one pick in the draft. And I know Kevin wasn't number one pick in the draft, but you get the point. Like, Mark Fox loved him. And subsequent to that, the only question I've ever heard anybody bring up, and I don't know whether this is true or not, I'm not that close to it, but people have wondered, does he love it? Like, he's clearly got the skills to and frame and all of that to make $100 million, even if he doesn't love it. Like, that's the thing with a guy like him. Even if he doesn't love it, he's going to make $100 million. But does he love it? And is he built to chase greatness? That's the only question I've heard. But if you can answer that question with a positive between now and the 2021 NBA draft, I'd have him in the top three somewhere. He's a special, special talent.
Yeah. BYU wasn't competitive at all, which was a stunner, but we'll give them a little more time before we evaluate the Cougars there. They're actually 92nd at KenPom. So they've kind of dropped a bit there. USC plays UConn in the bubble. I will not be there. I have left. That's on Thursday. But on that note, just real quick, I did have a story that went up on Tuesday that kind of, I tried to assess what has been done and what's still going. They're not done yet. Knock on wood. They gotta still get this done for another 4 days here. But I will say, well, actually, before I just do my little thing here, GP, from the outside looking in, just, you know, whether it's taking in the games or just frankly, you know, we've been in contact. So my reports or our discussions or anything from, you know, Goodman and Andy Katz were there, the coaches, just your general perceptions as someone from the outside looking in on what they have been doing and are still doing at Mohegan Sun.
It looks good. It seems to be going well. You know, I do think appearance is important. You know, the way it looks on television, you know, the best way to get lost in a game and forget we're in a pandemic is for Marcus Garrett to stop coughing and for us to not see a bazillion empty seats. And that's, I thought you mentioned this earlier. I thought Cameron Indoor looks great. It looks great on television. The thing in Fort Myers, I thought actually looked good because they just had a big drape. You don't see empty seats. To me, that the empty seats are a reminder this isn't normal. But when you don't see the empty seats and you do hear the fake crowd noise, it sort of feels like a real basketball game. The NBA figured this out inside its bubble down at Disney World. And I think whether it's Mohegan Sun or Cameron Indoor or Fort Myers, so far, so good. Now, it's going to be interesting when we start watching, you know, teams play games on their campus in their normal arena when their universities didn't invest in trying to make it look like anything other than an empty arena. It'll just be what it is. But I prefer when it is dressed up to some degree. Yeah. I think it makes for a better television product.
The Kansas-Kentucky game looked like they broke into the joint and just decided to play. Like, it looked sparse. That was just not, again, cosmetically, I 100% agree with you, by the way. There was just something weird about Kansas and Kentucky. I assume it's going to be the exact same thing for the Jimmy V, which will happen tonight with Illinois, West Virginia.
Now what some I've noticed on television is that some games are being shot, it appears, from a higher level or more straight down so that you don't get the normal crowd shots that you get when you're watching the game just go right to left and left to right.
Yeah, that'll be I'm with you on that. Okay, so with just, you know, a wrap up from my experience there. You know, I was ready to go yesterday. 8 days in, I was good. And in fact, after Villanova beat Hartford, Jay Wright was kind of talking, like, because they were leaving. Villanova was finally leaving after they unexpectedly played four games there. But he was mentioning, like, you know, Kyle Lowry talking about being down in the NBA bubble. And, you know, it was amazing that it was put on, but it's undeniable that, like, from a mental perspective, like, it is legitimately trying. I went 8 days. I could have gone, like, another three or four if you asked me to. I cannot imagine, and I don't know exactly what the setup was with ESPN and Disney and all that stuff. But just, you know, just living out of a hotel room for that long, I mean, that's just, it's unreal. What they have been able to do at Bubbleville to this point has been impressive. I did learn a couple of things in the previous, like, 48 hours. I think are worth sharing that I think people should keep in mind going forward, because what I think is going to be happening pretty soon here, if it's not already, is conference commissioners, athletic directors, and obviously coaches, because every single coach, I talked to almost every single coach that coached in this, with the exception of, my apologies, I didn't get to Jimmy Allen at Army and Danielle Marshall at Central Connecticut State. I didn't get to catch up with those guys.
Shame on you.
I know, might be. I'm not happy about it. But every other coach, I wasn't, like, in a lot of these instances, I was not even setting them up with a question. It was them offering, like, how great is this? I wish we could play 5 games here. They just felt as though, first of all, like, yeah, it can be a little trying to stay in a hotel that long, but, like, the idea of, like, you're in your hotel room, you get a security escort to take the service entrance, take those elevators down, and then, like, you're in the gym. Like, you're not getting on a bus. It's just, you're right there. There's almost, like, a good comfort to that. So the coaches are all in on this. But what I learned that is important, and not that this can't be replicated elsewhere, I think they're going to try, but, you know, we are in the middle of, and, you know, the pandemic is getting worse by the day. Now, the vaccine is on its way, and that's great news. It appears as though those most in need in this country are going to get their first dose of the vaccine later this month. This is wonderful, wonderful news. But for most everyday Americans, that's not going to be the case. So the COVID case counts are going to continue to rise and swell throughout December and then into January. So because of this, it's expected that conference commissioners will look into trying to do something similar to what's been done at Mohegan Sun. Their hand might be outright forced in the state of California, where right now Stanford, San Jose State, and maybe one more team. I think it's just Stanford, San Jose State, and the 49ers. They can't even play in their county anymore. So they might have to move immediately and very, very soon. But these state health departments, they're stretched thin because they have to use so many resources for the general public. And so where Mohegan Sun has the benefit is, since it's on tribal land, it has its own health department. It has its own statutes. It has some of its own governances, as the way a lot of this works with tribal lands when they belong to Native Americans. So because of that, the organizers at Mohegan Sun, they essentially needed communication with the Mohegan Sun health officials and Hartford Healthcare, which also outsourced the testing, on a daily basis and sometimes hourly basis to check in on big things and small. You can't realistically ask a state health department or a certain county's health department to do that to play regular season college basketball games. It's the NCAA tournament's a different deal, and it's not that this can't be done elsewhere, but I think that is the biggest thing I learned that I really wasn't clued in on that people need to remember, where you see what's gone on in Bubbleville, and it's been amazing that every single person that cleared quarantine to this point, again, knocking on wood, they got to do it for 4 more days, everyone was continued to test negative afterward, and they were testing every other day with saliva tests, which, by the way, are super easy, and I can't rave enough about how easy that was. But if you want to try and do this and get games in from a league standpoint, which I think might be a borderline necessity for some of these big conferences, Parrish, the location of them will be interesting and could prove challenging. Just as a complete hypothetical, like, if the ACC decided we're going to do this and we're going to try and do it in Greensboro, the amount of effort that would have to go into getting local health officials dedicated to doing this, while understanding that within that state, people are getting sick by the thousands, dying by the hundreds on a weekly, monthly basis over the next, you know, 2-3 months. That is a tough ask. So it's not that it can't be done, but the amount of time and effort that went into, and they're holding a total of almost 30 games. I mean, it's not that huge of a number, but they are from teams all across the country. So just keep that in mind. I basically had almost no complaints. My biggest complaint was they started playing Christmas music the day after Thanksgiving in the casino. I was like, come on, this isn't necessary. Otherwise, it was great. And the mask stuff, you know, it was the first time I know plenty of our listeners have needed to wear masks on a much more frequent basis than you and I, because we work from home. We, you know, if we put on a mask, we're going to bring our kids to school or go grocery shopping, but I had to wear masks at some points if I wasn't going back to my room for 8, 9, 10 hours, GP. But they've done a great job. They're almost through, and the reviews have been like kind of across the board positive. And the players, I just last thing here. I know I'm going a little bit long, but I was in there 8 days. And I did write a story on it. I'll link it in the podcast preview if you want to read it. I mean, these players, they were thrilled to get a chance to get out there and play games. They've been aching for it. I mean, Villanova before its first game, and Colin Gillespie like leading the pregame huddle, like you would have thought they were getting ready to go out and play an Elite Eight game. It was pretty cool, pretty intense, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to cover it. My personal prediction is that the Big East, this is not learned intel. I know the Big East has been in contact with Mohegan Sun, but I do think that the Big East will go to this, and it will try and get games in at Mohegan Sun in sometime in January or February.
I don't know why you wouldn't, other than cost. I mean, like,
cost is the big thing. Can't do it unless you have TV, by the way. That's the last thing. Because a couple people, like, if ESPN didn't broadcast it, it's super hard to pull off. You need the TV element to actually make this achievable.
Right. But, like, it's just, I don't want to say it's impossible. It's not impossible, I don't guess. But it seems problematic to be trying to fly, you know, Creighton to Seton Hall and Marquette to St. John's. It, like, just get everybody in one place and let's play every other day and knock this thing out. Like, again, I understand it's more complicated than we are going to make it out to be on the Eye on College Basketball podcast, but if it's possible to do, I guess this would be my prediction. If you don't do it, you will at some point wish that you might have.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. No, yeah, go ahead.
All right, so it's Wednesday, 11:45 Eastern right now, and we've got I think yesterday was probably the best, most interesting day of the season so far. We've got another interesting day on tap. Now, I don't want to preview the games too much because, like, the title game of the Maui Invitational, which is Texas and North Carolina. Did you pick Texas to win it, by the way?
Okay, I did pick Texas to win it, so we'll see what happens there.
Right.
And I got major issues with this, though. Like, we're not going to listen. Plenty of the people are listening to this podcast after this game is played or literally like when it's about to play. So we don't want to waste our time. I got a beef. Like, we don't have NBA counter programming. This isn't in Maui. What the hell, GP? Are you with me or what? The title game for the Maui championship should be the last tip of the day on the Wednesday. What are we doing here? This is so stupid.
Well, I'm assuming it's because they've got Jimmy V doubleheader tonight.
You're also right about that. Okay, I still hate it. I still hate it. I know the listeners are with me. The last game in Maui should be the championship game, but they clearly put that because we do have the Jimmy V. It is. I think Tuesday was slightly better than today, but these are clearly, because Thursday and Friday are, they're not that great. So these are clearly the two best days of this young season.
Right. And yeah, like, we're not going to preview the games because a lot of people, I would assume most people probably listening to this on their drive home from work. And at that point, you've already missed. I mean, at that point, you already know who won the Texas North Carolina game that picked, you know, it tips at 4 p.m. Eastern. But we do today get number 17 Texas against number 14 North Carolina, both teams undefeated. Then at 7 Eastern, we get number 11 West Virginia against number 1 Gonzaga in the first game of the Jimmy V. And then the second game of the Jimmy V is number 2 Baylor and number 5 Illinois. So there's three really big high profile games tonight. And can we talk about the story of the Maui Invitational so far?
You know we're going to. Yes.
It's Shaka Smart's hair.
It is Shaka Smart's hair. Now, we were aware of the Shaka Smart hair situation weeks ago because he popped on the occasional Zoom. And so, you know, the images started leaking out, like, you know, but once this is the game changer. Like, now they're playing on national television day after day, high profile games. And if Texas beats North Carolina, like, I don't know if Shaka Smart's getting a haircut before the end of the season. Like, because why would you? Like, Texas with Shaka Smart having hair, way better than Shaka Smart bald. Undeniable at this point.
It's not even close. And I don't, like, if we'd always known Shaka as Shaka with hair, then maybe Shaka with hair, like, it's like, whatever. It doesn't look as great. But, like, to go from bald to having, a great set of hair. Like, most people can't do that. Most people are bald because they're actually bald or they had balding problems.
Like you?
Like me. I'm bald now. I went from having ridiculous hair to now I'm bald, but I didn't just decide, you know what? I feel like I'd look great bald. I was just like, I'd rather, honestly, here's exactly what happened. I was watching a replay of a basketball game that I happened to be sitting courtside at. And the camera was shooting down on my bald spot. Now, keep in mind, you never see your bald spot. And so I'm watching it with my wife, and I'm like, oh, my God, is that me? Is that my head? And she was like, she's just really, and I said, is that what my head looks like? And she's like, well, yeah. And I said, well, what? Why didn't you ever tell me that's what my head looks like? She's like, I didn't want to bring it up. She's sweet. But I once I realized I've got this gigantic bald spot, like, what is the point of having spiky hair and a big bald spot? So I was like, all right, I'm done with it. Shaka actually has a great head of hair. I need to figure out why he got rid of it in the first place.
I think he's
place.
Got like a little widow's peak going on. I think that might be why. I don't know.
My man looks like Zach De La Roca.
I'm going like John Turturro, actually. I'm thinking, listen, Zach De La Roca is certainly in the job, but I feel like Turturro he's drifting into that realm because there's a little gray in there, but it's absolutely wonderful. I got a couple.
How could you look like Zach De La Roca and then decide you don't want to look like Zach De La Roca? That seems crazy to me. Quit it now. Quit it now.
That's right.
Quit it now.
So you got, on Texas, they got just a wonderful follicle situation going on. And then from what I can tell in the Carolina stuff I've watched, I think Roy, unless you can prove me otherwise here or state otherwise, I think Roy Williams has the best mask discipline of any head coach in college basketball right now. Does it seem like that? Like, I haven't really seen to have caught Roy pulling it down and screaming. Cause I'll tell you this, like, for as great as they did in Bubbleville, and this is around, I mean, the chin strap, and then coaches literally pulling down their mask to yell at their players, which defeats the actual purpose of wearing the mask. And we don't have to harp on these dudes, but like, it would be great if you could just, you know, pull a Chris Mooney, just wear that consistently so you don't have to pull it down. It seems like Roy is actually sticking with it, or have you seen otherwise?
I have noticed Roy being careful, and he should be, you know, given his age and everything else, and given, you know, that like, it's just the right thing to do. But you're right, the chin straps are something else in college basketball. I noticed it watching Texas Tech Houston on Sunday. You know, Kelvin Sampson and Chris Beard are close. I mean, they have a real relationship. Kelvin is also 65 years old, and I know that he takes this seriously because, like, he and I were texting a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, just people need to wear their mask. It's not a big deal. And so there was a moment in the Texas Tech Houston game where there was a little – it wasn't a scuffle. It didn't elevate to the level of scuffle, but there was a moment where two players were jawing at each other, and Kelvin had to run out on the court and, like, make sure it didn't escalate to the level of scuffle. And then they go to a timeout, and they come back from commercial, and Kelvin and Chris, like, sort of walked to midcourt to, I don't know, just say, hey, everything's cool, like, you know, whatever. And Kelvin's got his mask on, and he's talking to Chris, and Chris is – like 2 inches from Kelvin's face, gosh, and pulls his mask down to talk to Kelvin. And I could just see Kelvin. I don't want to say I saw Kelvin uncomfortable. I didn't see that. I imagined he was like, yo, either back up or put your mask back on. You know, I mean, he was 6 inches from Kelvin's face, pulling the mask down, talking to Kelvin. So, you know, again, we're not going to make a big deal out of this every time we see it, but we are seeing it quite often.
Yeah, it's not
like even in the Champions Classic, John Calipari was pretty good for it with most of the huddles. Like, you'd go to the huddle and John would have his mask on, but then they got in that under 15 second down by three huddle and his mask was off.
Oh yeah, I know. There was actually a camera shot where they caught Self and Cal both chin strapping it, and like, Self was in the foreground, Cal was in the background, and it was just, listen, it would be great if we could keep the mask on. I actually talked to one of the health officials at Bubbleville that was quoted in my story. She gave me a quote about the mask. I might use it in a, if this becomes like a legitimate thing where like there's like fines are coming in, I'll deploy that quote in a short little story there. But yeah, it just either get a mask you can wear like Mooney's, or just like, you can scream through the mask. It's going to be just as loud. I think they aren't doing it because it like starts to like pull down on the nose, because when you yell, you deploy your jaw and a really, you know, it drops louder. It drops more to project your voice louder. And so then it's just a whole situation. They'd rather not deal with it. I don't know. By the way, I was skeptical. I really didn't think we were getting into a mask discussion, but whatever. I was skeptical of these see-through masks, because I was like, but isn't it just, you know, isn't it defeating the purpose? If we can see you, then the particles can come and go clearly. John Gallagher at Hartford was deploying one yesterday against Villanova, and then he showed me the inside of it from a distance, and it does seem like it legitimately is like a proper mask there. I don't know how they pulled off that whole look, that relatively transparent look, but that is by a little inside college basketball. That's the mask now, if not for the Mooney one, where the coaches want it. Apparently, it's hard to get. Like, Tony Bennett was like, oh, you got to get this mask, man. I don't know who makes it. I'll find out for you. I was like, I'm rocking this Old Navy style, so I'm good with it. But that's the thing. Remember when we were in high school and, you know, like, Pogs were the thing? Our young listeners have no idea what we're talking about right now, by the way. But do you remember when Pogs were, like, a huge deal?
I don't.
What?
You and I are not the same age.
It's true. You got a decade on me. I guess you would have missed the Pogs. A lot of people know what Pogs are about.
Am I going to sound ridiculous if I ask this question? What are Pogs?
I think that's a little ridiculous, because I do genuinely feel like you should have been around and young enough when they were a thing. Pogs were, how do I explain this?
Keep in mind. We grew up in very different places, dude.
Yeah, okay, how about
like,
this?
Like, Pogs might have been a thing where you grew up, and where I grew up, it was camouflage.
Just, like, wearing camouflage?
Dude, you don't think people would just wear camouflage in North Mississippi?
No, I'm sure they would, but, like, when you were in seventh grade, was it wearing camouflage like a fad?
No, when I was in seventh grade, we would wear Sebagos. Do you remember Sebagos?
No shot.
No shot at Sebagos? Let me see what pops up when I Google Sebago to see if you'll have a proper. Yep, that's a Sebago. We would wear Sebagos. Google Sebagos when you get a few.
What's the spelling on this thing?
It looks like a Sebago.
All right, Sebago.
A Sebago.
There we go. What, shoes?
Sebagos, no socks, rolled up pants.
Terrible.
We did it.
Absolutely terrible. The No Context Ion College Basketball Podcast tease is going to be amazing, by the way. You know what I'm going to do? How about this? Can you don't look up Pogs? I'm not going to tell you. I want the listeners just to tweet at you. Give Parrish the best. First of all, before tell him on Twitter at Gary Parrish CBS. Just give me your guess. Like, when I say Pogs, what do you think that is? Just try and blindly guess. Do not Google this. What do you think it is?
I would assume also shoes.
Okay, there we go. That's your guess. Listeners, go ahead and inform him. Don't link him. Don't show him images. Try and explain to him over Twitter what Pogs were. What about Magic the Gathering? Was that a thing when you were younger?
Magic the Gathering?
Oh, my God.
I have
no, I wasn't a Magic guy, but this was like a huge, huge, huge deal. You don't remember Magic the Gathering?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
All right, let's take another guess here. What do you think?
What do I think? It sounds like if you were to ask me, I know this isn't right, but in a different conversation, if you were to say, what do you think about Magic the Gathering? I would assume it's some indie rock band.
Wow. So when I was...
It does sound like it could be a band name, Magic the Gathering.
I was high school class of 99. When I was in middle school, the three biggest fads, and this goes back to Tony Bennett bragging about his damn face mask. The three biggest fads by far in Vermont when I was in high school were Pogs, Magic the Gathering, neither of which I ever got into, but there were so many people that were. And then the third one I actually did get into a little bit, and why not? No shame. Third one was Hacky Sack. You must have had people that were into Hacky Sack when you were
young. Of course, we have Hacky Sack.
Okay, so Hacky Sack transcends our regions. Those were by far the three biggest, and Hacky Sacks were, that was a thing for like a good 3 years, and then it just died. But yeah, that was going to Spencer's and like picking out the designs on your hacky sacks. That was big time stuff.
We definitely had that. And I remember the other thing that like people would wear, like guys, Guess shirts, like Guess jeans, and you'd have these striped Guess shirts. Those were like a big thing. Like if you were rocking a Guess shirt, you were probably gonna be able to pick somebody up at the skating rink.
Oh, this is taking me back. No, Guess was not big with us. The big ones with us were Stussy. Do you remember Stussy?
Of course, yes.
Okay. And then do you remember I think it was N1, the N1 basketball shirts where they had like the slogans on them, like the sayings, like.
I don't know that.
I'm first.
I mean, I'm sure I know that, but that was not a big deal.
I win, you lose, who's next? Okay, that was another big deal. You don't remember these shirts?
I don't.
Oh, this is taking me back, man. Yeah, I'm almost positive they were called N1 shirts. They were like, yeah, they had the character of like the basketball guy. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, this goes back to face masks, and then it goes back to you being bald.
Quit it now. What if Shaka in the middle at halftime, he's doing a halftime interview, walk off the court, and they're like, so coach, you're up 42-37 at the break. Your thoughts on the first half? And he said, quit it now. Or said, Bulls on parade.
Longhorns on parade. Yeah, exactly. There we go.
He just needs to start saying Rage Against the Machine lyrics randomly in interviews if he wants to pull off this Zach De La Rocha look.
That's wonderful. Yeah. I got nothing else. I mean, I
just got the most random text from my mom.
Okay. Talking about Pogs?
No. This is what my mom just texted me Wednesday morning. This is my mom's retired. She's constantly texting. She's on. How good is Scottie Pippen Jr.? Why is my mom asking me about Scottie Pippen Jr. on a Wednesday morning?
What the hell?
Why do you think my mom is asking me about Scottie Pippen Jr. on a Wednesday morning?
I don't even. Did he do something?
I don't have any idea. If he did, we're going to have to bring my mom on the Ion College Basketball Podcast to identify what and highlight what it is he did. I wonder if this is it. TMZ had pictures of Malik Beasley and Larsa Pippen at the airport holding hands. Yes. And Malik Beasley's wife like these pictures like pop on TMZ, and Malik Beasley's wife was like, what is my husband doing with holding hands with Larsa Pippen in the airport? Larsa Pippen? That's Scottie Pippen Jr.'s mom. Scottie Pippen's ex-wife.
Okay. I'm not up on the Pippen family, okay? Like, love me some Bulls. Huge Bulls fan, but I'm not in the know on Larsa Pippen. Sorry.
So Larsa used to be best friends with the Kardashians.
Oh, my God.
And she was married to Scottie, and they had little Scottie Jr., and then, I don't know, she started hooking it with Future at some point, and her and Scottie like decided we can't do this anymore. And meantime, Malik Beasley's got his own little family, and his wife jumps on TMZ, and she's like, why is my husband holding hands with Larsa Pippen in the airport in Miami? Like, apparently Malik Beasley's birthday was sometime
soon.
Look
at this. You got this. You don't know what Pogs are, and you got this whole situation on lockdown. What is going on right now?
I read everything on TMZ. I know everything about everything that's on TMZ. So Malik Beasley's wife is like just like scrolling TMZ, same way I do. And she's waiting for Malik Beasley to come home for his birthday. She's like planning a birthday party. And instead, he's in Miami with Larsa Pippen. It's a hell of a deal to run into in the middle of a pandemic.
By the way, what's with Scottie Pippen Jr. being Scotty? Scottie is Scottie. What's that about?
I feel like I did once know the answer to this.
What's that about?
I feel like it was intentional. Well, clearly it was intentional. They didn't unintentionally spell his name incorrectly. I think it was to
differentiate, I guess.
Yes.
But
yeah,
then is he really a junior if the first name is spelled differently? I guess in theory it is. I've never seen that before.
I've never seen it. Be like, do you know I'm actually Gary Parrish Jr.?
Yes, we have talked about this. It's absurd.
Like,
but yes.
But like, what if I spell my name with two R's? Yeah, like G-A-R-R-Y. Yeah. Or what if I spell my name S-C-O-T-T-Y, but still call myself Gary? Yeah,
okay.
How wild would that be? How confusing would that be for everybody?
West Virginia plays Gonzaga at 7 o'clock on ESPN. That's potentially a tremendous, tremendous game, by the way. West Virginia can win, but I don't think they will, but they have the front court to make it interesting. And then Illinois plays Baylor at 10 o'clock on ESPN in the second half of the Jimmy V. It is a wonderful night of hoops, and it's as of 12:02, they're going to play this Ravens-Steelers game at 3:40 on NBC. It's a super weird sports day. So if you have mixed in this podcast on Wednesday, our sincere thanks for you, because there's tons of hoops and that NFL game to kind of throws a wrench into everything. So just keep in mind with that. We'll be back on Friday. There's really There's not a ton Thursday. UConn versus USC is probably the best game out of Bubbleville, and then nothing else too enticing. Florida, BC, like, that's a 9:30 game from Uncasville. I don't know. But we'll be back Friday morning, and we'll preview the weekend. We'll see what else happens here. And, yeah, that's – I mean, listen, we've completely gone off the rails. I'm more than okay with it. Kind of can't believe you've never even heard of Pogs or Magic the Gathering. Again, just do me a favor. Can you please be honest about this? Don't Google it. I want people to try and describe to you what these things are so you can learn it that way, as opposed to just like Googling it and just being like, oh, that's what it is. Because the fact that you think that Pogs are shoes is amazing. So
my Google searches are dedicated right now to Larsa Pippen. I don't have time for Pogs or Magic the Gathering. I'm Googling Larsa Pippen. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. Legend. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Malik Beasley's wife. That's a tough spot. Thank you guys once again. Listen to the Ion College Basketball Podcast in the middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. If you enjoy it, please tell somebody about it. If you're not subscribed, go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. And we will talk to you again on Friday. Until then, take care.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.